I never played with a player like that on this team.
Hello, Bulls fans, and welcome to another 2015-16 edition of the Chicago Bullseye. I am your host, Mark Lewenthal, and with me, as always, is the doctor, Fred Pfeiffer. Fred, talk to me, buddy. How are you? Long time.
Living the dream, Mark. Living the dream. It's been far too long for us to get together. You've been busy. I've been busy. You actually moved out of town, out of Chicago, into Milwaukee. So I know there's a lot going on with you, a lot going on with me, but finally we're back, ready to rock and roll. Before we get into the beloved Bull, for those of you who don't remember, who haven't been following us for a while, Mark was a lifetime Cubs fan, and one day he decided, a few years ago, just to drop it. I don't know how, but he just said, you know what, I'm going to become a Sox fan. Became a Sox fan. Is this era over in your life? Are you back on board? I know you went to the game the other day in Milwaukee. Are you an officially a Cubs fan now, or what's the story? Where are you at?
Okay, well, I mean, I would just like to say that my love for baseball has never been anywhere near my love for basketball. It wasn't even the same stratosphere. I need something to do in the summertime. That was kind of what baseball served for me. Fred, long story short, it was really the management before that I thought was just a mess. I didn't think it was ever going to get any better.
Here we go.
When it got better, when the management got better, it's been clear for a little bit now that the management's better. I think
you actually dumped the team.
Could I give my no. I dumped the team in like with Soriano. Is when they signed Soriano was when I was like, this is ridiculous. Like this.
Yeah, but they won two. No, that's not true. They won two divisions with Soriano.
All right.
You're way off.
Still. They were giving bad contracts to bad players, and it looked to me like it wasn't worth rooting anymore. Anywho, I tried to revert my love. That couldn't happen. I tried. It didn't work. I think it was around the time I was in San Diego, because I remember I tried to like the San Diego Padres. It didn't work. I tried the White Sox. I just couldn't get into it. During the last couple weeks, I have felt the strings in my heart getting pulled a little bit.
This guy's unbelievable. Really?
And I, today, especially, hang on, being in a new city where, you do see, there's like this connection when you see Chicagoans, it's like, Chicago. And, you definitely see it more with the Cubs than you do with anybody else. Though you do see it with the Bears a little bit, but you see it with those two. And I found when I went to the game the other day, the strings in my heart, it was like having the devil and the angel on my shoulder. And the angel was just like, Mark,
here we go.
Come to hot dog and just enjoy the game. It's okay.
You are the worst fan. You are the worst fan of all time. I swear to gosh.
So starting today, my love for the Cubs initially began when the Cubs won the wild card in 1998. And now we're coming back right now, 2015, tonight. Now if they lose tonight, I might get off the bandwagon again for now. But
probably. Exactly.
Tonight, I am back on board. Go Cubs. Go Cubs, go.
Oh, that's so great to hear. Thank God the Bulls have only had one losing season, I think, in the last 10 years, or else you'd be looking for a new partner to start Milwaukee Bucks eye. I'm pretty sure. But, man, I guess it's better than you not being on board.
There's a big difference, man. There's a big difference in terms of professional sports. If you have bad management and that management can't leave, you feel like you're kind of like a prisoner to this management. And it's really tough to watch a team when you don't trust their management, because it's just going to be bad move after bad move, disappointment after disappointment. It wasn't because they were losing. It was because they weren't doing things to win. They weren't trying to be a winning team. They were signing bad players. They were just a mess. And I mean, it's clear that the guy that owns them now loves this team and cares about baseball. It's clear that Theo Epstein is probably a freaking genius. I mean, my God, he said had it down to the nail how long it was going to take to rebuild this team. And, whatever. I mean, God bless on the north side. Part of it, too, is living in Wrigleyville and how nuts and crazy it is all the time. It's nice being in another city, because I can go out tonight, go to a bar, watch the game, and it's not going to be, like, suffocating.
I just hope. I mean,
like
I wish we didn't lose all those. I wish we didn't lose all those old episodes, because I swear, I think I predicted the minute that you announced it, you were officially, you know, cutting your ties with the Cubs, becoming a Sox fan, literally, you know, on our show, that when we finally did win that World Series or participate in the World Series, you would be somewhere in Wrigleyville with your chest painted blue, you know, passed out in the gutter somewhere celebrating along with everyone else. But, you know, I digress. Let's enough about the Cubs.
Hey,
I love the Cubs. I've always have.
I'm a Back to the Future fan. Back to the Future.
Oh, that's what did it.
Back.
Yeah, exactly.
Really,
isn't it amazing, though? Holy smokes. I still remember seeing that. Like, I still remember watching it in the theaters. I love Back to the Future, too, although all film. The first one was the best. Second one was slightly worse, and the third one was eh.
My order changes. 1, 3, 2 is my order, but go on.
Okay. So, isn't it amazing that they, you know, potentially predicted that if they end up winning a World Series this year? I mean, goodness gracious. And I still say that will be the biggest event. If the Cubs win a World Series, that hits the city of Chicago. It can't get any bigger than that. 100-plus years just from the, you know, just the amount of time. You know, we've seen a Bears, you know, Bears Super Bowl. I still think the Cubs winning a World Series would be the biggest thing we see here, definitely nationally. It'll be much bigger nationally, too. So.
Oh, yeah, it'll be huge. It'll be huge. Yeah, it'll be – you know what I think funny is great about the Back to the Future 2 thing, Fred, is that it was a joke when they did this 25 years ago. It was like a joke. Like, oh, the Cubs winning the World Series, that'll happen in 25 years. And I don't think anybody thought that the Cubs would still have not won a World Series 25 years after that movie was made. And, you know, and whatever, whether they win this year or don't win this year, the fact of the matter is that they're clearly going to be a winning organization for a long time out. They've got a great – they've got a good ball club. They have the things in place to be good for a long period of time. I mean, if you're a Cubs fan, this is as good as you could ever have felt in my lifetime about this team.
No, agreed completely. So, you know, enough about that. We're all Cubs fans. I love them. You're back on board. I'm sure most of the listening audience, or I hope, is, you know, on board with the Cubs winning the World Series. Let's talk Bulls, man. For opening night,
oh,
last
God.
Night.
Oh, God. Great.
You know,
great.
What do you think?
Great,
what's your general impression?
Oh,
I had a school board meeting. I studied the stats, but, you know, before we get into anything else.
The stats don't do it justice, Fred. I was sitting on my seat, and, you know, whatever. It's a preseason game. I was excited to see the system. I mean, obviously, you know, a lot of players weren't playing last night, but I was excited to see the system. And, boy, oh, boy, did it not disappoint. I saw some tapes over the summer of Fred Hoiberg's offensive sets in Iowa State, and I just couldn't see our team doing it. I just was just like, we don't have the shooters to do it. I just couldn't see us doing it. And, honestly, it was like deja vu the minute that game started. This was a completely different offense, and it was so much fun to watch. And I mean, look, there were a lot of mistakes yesterday. They didn't execute it perfectly. A big part about it, and especially with the poor shooting, was that we had no big man that could score. So I mean, not having Powell in the game, not having Taj as well, who are our two best interior scorers, was a huge, huge deficit for us. Not having Dunleavy obviously hurt as well. The team came out very, very cold, but the one thing you saw immediately was how they were able to create open shots for each other. I mean, it was just this constant pick and roll, drive and kick. You know, were they going to dish it to the guy down low, or were they going to dish it back out and, you know, kick it out to the open guy for three? Time and time again, even though the Bulls yesterday shot so terribly, I think they shot 33% for the night, they took great shots the whole way through. And even though they were bricking threes after three, it's the first preseason game. You know, those will come around. Last year, I mean, oh, my God, time and time again, running out the shot clock, taking contested shots, not really being able to even create, like, you know, just taking crappy shots with a defender on you. I mean, last night, we took 22 more shots than the Milwaukee Bucks. We took 22 more shots. Yet, they only had four more turnovers than we had. They only had four more turnovers, but we took 22 more shots. I don't even really know how that happened. The Bucks yesterday took 11 threes. We took 39 threes. And we ended up not doing too bad from three. For much of the game, we were under 10%. But Doug McDermott just came on. You know, God bless the guy. Came on at the end. And you see people today saying, well, he's playing against the reserves. Who the hell cares? I mean, he is a reserve. If you could have Doug McDermott come in and play like he played. Once he got his confidence going a little bit, he started to roll. And I really think a lot of guys were very aggressive yesterday. Bobby Portis taking 12 shots yesterday, 2 from 3. You know, didn't shoot the ball well, but he was very aggressive. He got 14 rebounds. I mean, He looked like a player that, give him a little bit of time to just get his game going. I mean, he was a plus 20 yesterday. Doug McDermott was a plus 15. You got to respect the fact that the Bucks pretty much had that same team that we played in the playoffs. Jabari wasn't playing, but whatever. That's the team we played in the playoffs. We were playing guys that are never going to see the floor. And yet we still beat the Bucks on a night where they shot 45%, almost 46%, and we shot 33%. Somehow in there, we shot 22 more shots than they did. It's just unbelievable. And did you know, Fred, the height for threes last season, the entire season, the most threes we ever shot in a game was 31. We shot 39 threes last night.
Yep.
39.
Yeah. Well, let me jump in real quick.
Good shots are good shots. And Fred Hoiberg came out afterwards, and they asked him, do you think 39 threes is too much? And he goes, I think good shots are good shots, and all that I want my players to do is take good shots. And I was like, look, watching that game, they took good shots. They missed good shots, but they took good shots. This
well,
offense
if you don't think,
created opportunities.
Yeah. If you don't think shooting three-pointers is part of the NBA game in 2015-16, you must be living under a rock. I mean, it's what won Golden State the title last year, basically, is attacking from that three-point line. I mean, let's not get into advanced analytics, but in general, the guys that shoot and hit three-pointers more than any other team are all playoff teams, and they're all teams that are going to be challenging for a title. So, you know, do they got to shoot better from three? Absolutely. It's not going to happen unless you keep on shooting. So I did want to touch, number one, on McDermott, which, you know, I've probably been in the minority here, a big believer in the guy. I just don't believe that shooting is something you lose, right? It's something that I saw that he had in college, and it's ability that he has. And I just think to expect a guy to make judgments on a guy who played less than 400 minutes last year total, basically in 5-minute intervals, where if you made one mistake, he was pulled, to make judgments on a player in that type of environment is just plain idiotic. And I heard far too many judgments on, you know, McDermott sucks, when you don't look at the bigger picture and say, wow, you know, he really wasn't given a chance. And he wasn't. He absolutely 100% was not given a chance to succeed. He wasn't put in a position to succeed. And, you know, that's going to happen when your coach is only worried about winning that game and not the bigger picture. Well, things are different now. You know, Hoiberg after the game with a quote, which really stuck with me, for him, Hoiberg talking about McDermott, quote unquote, for him to come out and continue to shoot after struggling was a great sign, end quote. Again, Hoiberg on McDermott, for him to come out and continue to shoot after struggling was a great sign. You know, if that was Tibbs, he wouldn't even be playing in the second half. He wouldn't have had the opportunity to come out after struggling. He'd be out. His ass would be firmly planted on the bench. I really think Hoiberg, who was a shooter, knows how to handle shooters. He's going to do a lot more for Doug. He's going to put him in a position to succeed, and I think he's going to have a great year. You know, is he going to be an all-star? Probably not. But he's going to be, I think, a candidate for most improved player to go from where he was to what I think will be this year, which is, you know, contributing solid NBA player. One more comment on Noah. Noah's stats were, you know, just awful for the game. 20 minutes, 0 for 4. He did rebound the ball well, but he was only one of the two players on the entire team who had a negative plus-minus. He had 7 offensive rebounds, 1 defensive rebound, which is awful strange. But that 7 offensive rebounds is huge. That's what you want to see from Noah, to see him more active. I didn't get to watch the game. I had a school board meeting. But he had 8 rebounds in 20 minutes, all good. You know, the 0 for 4, the 4 turnovers, 1
yeah,
point.
The 4 turnovers.
Not good. But
I'm going to say this about
how did he look? Did he look more active than that?
Yeah, much more active. And I'm going to say this about the turnovers. Noah has never been in a position. Wait until you see this offense, Fred. Because when the big guys are getting the ball down low, it isn't like back in the day where Noah would be wide open for a 15-footer. This was, they drive in, the defenses collapse, and either they toss it to the guy down low, they toss it to the big man, or they kick it back out. The passes that Noah was getting were very difficult passes to catch. And one of the plays, he tried taking the guy off the dribble and he turned it over. This is the preseason. This is the beginning of a new offense. I was amazed at how well this offense looked from a passing standpoint and creating the opportunities for each other when they haven't really played together at all. And as far as Noah's concerned, these big guys were put in a position where you're going to turn over the ball a lot, the types of passes that they were getting. And, I mean, there were some very challenging passes. And just give them a little bit of time to get used to this. The biggest thing for me, too, is that Noah, for a lot of the game, was our only big presence down there. So wait until Pau's back, and he Noah's not going to be the one getting those crazy passes. Plus, the team is going to learn. It's a lot easier when defended in the middle of the air to chuck the ball back out to three to an open man than it is to try to pass around two guys that are collapsing on you to get the big man. Not all of this falls on Joakim Noah. And just it was whatever. It was a rough game. But I thought he looked far more active. He only played 20 minutes. So the fact that he got 8 rebounds shows how many rebounds would he have gotten had he have played more minutes. The 0 for 4, he missed. There were a couple shots that he missed that were just – they were just gimme shots. And, I mean, he needs to get, I think, his confidence back a little bit in how he handles himself in the post. There were a couple plays where he just went back up right away. He didn't do, you know, the patented things to try to get the guy to fake a little bit and then go up. I mean, things like that. I mean – I am sure that Noah is going to play better. He certainly looked better. And, you know, I like the fact that he tried to be aggressive with the ball, because if he can start learning how to dribble through traffic just a little bit, the teams are not going to know how to defend. They're not going to know how to defend this offense, because you can't double-team anybody. You got to keep everybody honest. And I'll tell you this, the player yesterday who impressed me the most without question was Jimmy Butler. From the first minute of the game, man,
yeah, I heard
that
too.
Guy was thriving in the system. And I'll tell you who's going to thrive in the system,
yeah,
is Derrick Rose.
Let me jump in really quick, too, about, you know, we can't go overboard. It is one preseason game. I understand all that. But there are some trends I really want to see throughout the preseason that will hopefully lead into the regular season. You know, Mirotic, I looked at his numbers. You know, I loved it. He got to the line 10 times, right? Fantastic. That's what he's always done well. The 105 from three, though, that's one thing I really want to see Nico work on, getting, you know, either taking better shots from three or hitting at a higher percentage. That's just one thing. Obviously, it's only one game.
He airballed a wide open shot.
Can lose any sleep on it. But he did, you know, 24 minutes. No, that's not good. Yeah, see, I'd like him more in the post. I heard that I did on Twitter, you know, chat with a few guys saying that they were using him a little bit more in the post. I think that's a great thing to do. Bring him down in the post. I think he's got an underrated, excellent post game. Snell, you know, I don't know what you thought about. He played quite a bit of minutes, actually. He was the only guy over 30, along with Doug, picked that back last night. What did you think of how he looked?
I didn't think that he played with a ton of confidence. I mean, I think, you know, hopefully he gets a little bit better as time goes on. I mean, 7 points mm-hmm. in 31 minutes. I mean, he didn't shoot the ball terrible. I mean, he didn't shoot the ball well, but he shot about 33%. But,
yeah.
I didn't feel like he played with a ton of confidence. Let's give it – it's going to be a different ballgame when you have other
yes.
guys out there. Yesterday, we did not have the personnel to beat this team, and we did beat the Bucks. And the craziest thing to me, man – we scored 105 points when we shot 33%. That's insane. This team is going to be a team that can score 110, 115 points a night.
Mark, Snell and Doug McDee, as long as Dunleavy's out, last year everybody talked about our record when Dunleavy was out. I think we were, you know, pretty much a 500 team in January when he basically missed that entire month. It's just so important that both those guys up their game, because if they can't at that small forward position, it's going to be, you know, we're going to struggle at periods throughout the season. I still think we will, just because Dunleavy is one of the guys on the team that really extends the floor. He's such a good guy at providing spacing, and I think that's why the Bulls played better with him last year. But if Doug can hit the three and Snell can hit the three, you know, I think a lot of the issues with Dunleavy's absence will be alleviated. You know, one other quick point before we get into Jimmy, and I do – we want to talk a little bit about Jimmy versus Derek and all this, you know, nonsense that's kind of going on now in the preseason. Take a guess what the top five players last year in preseason minutes for the Bulls. What do you think they were in order? Do you think you can come close? Think you can name them last year? The three players who averaged
minutes?
The most in the preseason as far as minutes go.
Let's see.
Last year preseason.
Jimmy, Pau, and Derek.
Pau Gasol was number one on the Bulls in preseason minutes per game. He averaged 28 minutes per game. That was significantly up during the regular season. It's such an abomination to me. I know some people might say, yeah, well, he was new in the team, and you know, he wanted him out there. He said, nonsense. The guy's 35 years old. What the heck are you doing playing Pau Gasol 28 minutes per game? I think Coach Fred will, you know, hopefully lower that number somewhere around 20 to 24 would be probably tolerable.
He already did.
He didn't
play him yesterday.
Well, exactly. Good move. Exactly. And that was a good move. And it was totally, you know, it was just a give a vet a day off type of thing. Number, you said Taj Gibson? Was that the other guy?
Yeah.
He was fourth.
No, I said Derrick Rose and Jimmy.
No, Derrick Groves wasn't in the top five. If you remember, he was coming off an injury, so they had him on a limit. But last year was Gasol, Butler, Gasol, McDermott, Butler, Gibson, and Heinrich all played more, were the top five guys, all played more than 24 minutes per game. Heinrich, Gibson, and Gasol didn't even play in the first game. And from everything I've read, it was just basically a coach's decision. There was some excuse given about Heinrich with a minor toe injury, but I just already like what I'm seeing. Like, don't play him. I don't care about winning the preseason title. Who gives a crap? We've won it like 5 years in a row. You rest your older guys, and you know, we go into the season as healthy as we could possibly be, and you know, let's hit the ground running as we go into game one. I'm so glad that those three guys sat out.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like it's a different era, especially the relationship with the coach. I mean, I heard some comments from McDermott today, and I mean, they were definitely, you know, direct shots at Thibodeau, but, you know, one of the things that he said is being able to play freely, openly, you know, trusting each other when we're playing, not being told every move on the offense, but also, you know, being able to make a mistake and not getting pulled. And, I mean, you saw it yesterday. Same with Nico. Nico and McDermott played terrible in the first half. A lot of guys played terrible, but those two especially played terrible. And they got the opportunity to redeem themselves in the second. And people today are saying that Doug McDermott was the player of the game. I would disagree. I think it's Jimmy Butler, but regardless, it doesn't really matter. Doug McDermott played great in the second half. And how huge is that going to be for his confidence? If he had a game where he shot, you know, 0-for-8 or something, he was like 1-for-4 from 3 at the half, something like that. It was terrible.
I know, I was
How
being sarcastic.
How would he feel going into the next game? And now today, he's going to feel better today. He's going to feel better going into the next game now that he has a little bit of confidence. And, he went off, man. He went off. And you're going to need three-point shooters in this offense. You're going to get open shots. And I don't want it to be the Derek and Jimmy show anymore. I mean, we've got a deep team, and they're going to have to play. You know, they're going to have to play deep. And I think that we might even need a little bit more depth in that backcourt to be able to really execute this offense the way that it needs to be executed.
It's funny, like, people can't always see for whatever reason on Twitter when I'm being sarcastic, but I had tweeted, gosh, it would have really helped if we would have had a guy who can hit 4 3-pointers off the bench in the second half last year against Cleveland. You know, just and people were like, I was being completely sarcastic. That's my whole point from last year, is why Doug McDermott should have played more, because he can hit the three. He would have been extremely valuable if he would have, you know, maybe had a few less wins during the regular season in order to get him some playing time. And built his confidence, and then allowed him to be a productive player in the playoffs to kind of add long-distance shooting. But you know what? The decision was made. He wasn't good enough defensively. His ass sat on the bench, and he didn't even see the light of day. So, you know, obviously those days are gone. This will be different. But I do feel like that's an indication that, you know, there is room for improvement here, that not all the bullets in the holster were utilized last year in that series against the Cavs.
I got to ask you this, though, and I couldn't tell from the game. How did the Bulls take 22 more shots than Milwaukee when the turnovers are relatively similar? I mean, I just don't get it. How does that happen? Is it because they're shooting the ball so quickly that, you know, the Milwaukee possessions just – their time of possession is so much more than the Bulls? I mean, how is it that the Bulls – had so many more shots? I know you didn't see the game, but I mean, like, how does it even happen? How is it feasible that could happen? They took 22 more shots than the Bucks.
I think the answer is, though, is clear. The Bulls have just now this year, they're going to run an offense that has a much faster pace. And, you know, I think that's in line with the way the direction that the league is going, and I think it's a good move. So let's move on to Jimmy, though. I want to talk about the latest with Jimmy and Derek's comments. I don't have too much more time here, but I think it's something we absolutely need to get into about, you know, Rose's comments on day one regarding the money. He brought it up without being asked, and, you know, some people took that as a shot at Jimmy, you know, with all the money being thrown around. I didn't take it for that. I thought it was completely out of context. Derek has a tendency to say, you know, strange, sometimes, you know, foolish, maybe what some would say dumb things. I think he's taken out of context more than any player I've ever seen. And I think big picture, if you step back, really, who cares? Really? You know, does he play hard when he's healthy on the court? The answer to me is clearly yes. And does he play well? And I think he's, I think he improved as the year went on last year, and I think Derek is going to be rock solid for us this year. I will say it is, to me, more Jimmy's team, though, now. I am getting that he's more taking on that alpha role, and there is obviously some friction there between those two, but, you know, that's – luckily we have a coach now who's much more equipped to handle it, who's a much better communicator than the previous guy, the previous – Neanderthal, who, you know, really couldn't talk to anyone really well. So I think that, you know, whatever friction there is will hopefully be worked out inside the team. And, you know, with winning, a lot of success alleviates a lot of issues.
I mean, I thought that it was...
Did you fall asleep
on
me?
No, I almost think that people want Derrick Rose to fail, especially Joe Crowley from the Chicago Sun-Times. But the minute that things go wrong for the guy, it's almost as if everybody just wants to use it for as an excuse to bring up the injuries he's had in the past and yada, 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 and it's fine. I mean, if that's what you want to do, I get it. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's another injury. It's another thing. But, I mean, this was a very freak thing. And for, you know, people to be – he's – you know, people were, like, immediately treating it as if he had, like, torn his ACL again. And it's like, this is something that happens in the NBA. Players break their orbitals. A lot of point guards have done that. And, I mean, they're wearing the mask. A lot of guys have worn masks and – gone on. LeBron wore one, I think it was 2 years ago for part of the season. Westbrook obviously had one for a period of time. Conley, a lot of players have had it. I mean, there's a freak thing. From all reports that we have heard, Derek has been amazing. And I mean, he's come back and he's been absolutely amazing. And it's like, people don't even want to see it anymore. They want to see him fail. And they think that it's like some big funny joke. And it's like, all right, I mean, if that's what you want, if we want to jump on every single thing that he says, I mean, you know, if you care about the Bulls and you want them to win, you're going to need Derrick Rose to be good, or else we're not going to be able to get through any humps unless Derrick Rose is a good player. Not necessarily who he was before, but just a good player. And it's, you know, I'm sick and tired of people just jumping on every single problem. Sam Smith had a great article last week where he really stuck up for Derrick and called out all the haters, and he's just like, I've never seen somebody in my life misquoted so much. People take everything he says so harshly, like every single thing. I've never seen a player under a microscope like that. And it's like, you know, even with the you know, you see with what was going on in his with the rape allegation. And it's like, as somebody was texting me the next day and they're like, yeah, what a great role model and this and that. I'm like, well, I don't know what. The fact that Derek gets a little freaky on the side, Derek's not the one coming out here and talking about this. It's the media. The media could easily take the report and say that blah, blah, blah. You know, they don't have to be completely specific about what's in the report. They could direct people to read it on their own. The fact is that nobody talks about the media, and the fact that the media comes out there and saying that Derek is having group orgies with his buddies, people just focus on Rose and how sick that is. You want to know what? People behind closed doors sexually probably do much weirder things than that. I mean, you know, whatever.
Oh, yeah. Lord knows what goes on with you.
Right?
Anybody listening to this, you know, just imagine if you had your own private life thrown out there like that, you know, and whatever. I'm just sure anyone would be embarrassed with the result. That's why I purposely haven't even read it. Like, I haven't gone out to find out what they were specifically talking about.
Neither.
I think there's a ton of red flags that this woman didn't even call the police. It's just screaming that she civil trial. They used to date. The whole thing to me just kind of stinks, right? So I'm not even trying to get involved. I mean, you know, pay attention to the specifics of it. It's all allegations. If he did, obviously, if the allegations are true, you know, that's a horrible thing, and it's a much different situation. But there's just so many questions that immediately come up. Then why did you wait this long? Why didn't you call the police? It just doesn't, you know, I don't buy some of the excuses I've heard, right?
Fred, so a lot if you were of questions, so, but besides the questions, look at the fact
you,
that on the
I
other
think her
side
excuse
of town,
was, I was worried what my family would say. Then why did you bring it up now?
You have another player that's playing in the same building in Patrick Kane who had the same thing happen to him this summer. And frankly, now Patrick Kane now seems to be innocent as well. But for a period of time, it sounded like there was way more of a chance that this happened to Patrick Kane than to Derrick Rose. It seemed from day one that with Derrick Rose, it seemed like somebody was trying to shake him. The media treated Kane completely differently. And it's like, first of all, Kane had supporters out on the day that he came back cheering and going crazy. And it's like, the media never tried to attack Kane, like, pretty much like Kane's a monster. It was almost as if they were hoping for Kane to be vindicated. With Derek, people came out immediately, even when there was so little going on with it, bypassing the fact that this is something where this woman has reported this now a couple times and it's gotten thrown out by judges. Her lawyers left her before. There's been a lot of things that have occurred which makes this seem shady. And yet the media didn't really cover that. The media tried to treat him like, oh, it's almost Kobe Bryant-esque, where the Bryant case was like, oh boy, this is looking bad. And it's like, I don't get it. It's like this is not about morals anymore. This is about the fact that people want to smear Derrick Rose, and people want to protect Patrick Kane. And it's not one versus the other.
I don't agree with that.
The media has the responsibility. To be, just tell the freaking facts. Don't try to skew things one way for either side. Just tell the facts, and we move on.
You know, basically, I don't agree with that the media was trying to protect Kane. I don't think – I think most people were pretty negative towards him. And, you know, maybe rightly so. You know, I think from what I've heard, I do – some people have run into him. A lot of this is of his own doing as far as Patrick Kane goes. But, you know, I don't know if he's guilty or innocent here. But I do disagree that he was getting a pass. I don't feel that way at all. Neither of these guys were getting a pass, you know. So, you know, I don't think it's, well, everybody gave a pass to Derek Kane and everybody was hard on Derek. I don't feel it's that way. I don't feel that way at all. I don't feel it's true. What was more, out of all this stuff, you know, we've kind of touched a little bit on all this stuff, and I think we both agree you should try your best not to get yourself involved in these type of situations. At best, that's the situation that happened. At worst, they're both guilty of a crime. That said, I also found it strange how when he got injured, just the outcry of anger and the outcry of, you know, against Derek, to me, was a little bit surprising and frankly disappointing. I just don't. You know, I do see, under, you know, he said a couple strange things, and I understand maybe you thought he should have come back after the first ACL tear, but I don't think he deserves anywhere near the amount of negative, you know, kind of really hate that he gets. I just don't get it.
What about giving him some respect for last year? He tore his meniscus, and he was back before the playoffs so he could get ready and be good for the playoffs, and he came back and he was great in the playoffs. Why can't we talk about that at all? It's as if it doesn't exist. People are still upset about the fact that he was cleared to play in March of 2 years ago when the team wasn't very good. The team was not built to win that year. They were dismantled, and then the plan was to bring him back, you know, make the team better a year after that, which they didn't do. But regardless of which, that team was not built to win, and this is a very serious injury. And they said, well, he just got injured again. Well, you jerk off. Hindsight's 20/20. The fact is that it was the right move. Whether you think it was the right move or not, it was the safe move at the time for our star. People look at him now in a different light. And I get it. He's been injured a lot. Things happen. But why don't we give him credit when credit is due? He came back last year as quickly as he could, and he contributed to the success of this team. And he played with the torn meniscus for a period of time. He had that torn meniscus for like a week before he actually got pulled out and stopped and, you know, and got the surgery. So whatever. I mean, this is just a freak accident. This thing happened.
Yeah, I was talking to my friend yesterday. He brought up a good point. You know, Bulls tickets are extremely expensive. He's killing himself trying to get some tickets for him and his son. You know, why come out and say, you know, I need to feed my kids, basically? It was really kind of a nicer version. It was kind of, though, you know, I'm all concerned about PJ and PJ's future, you know, as far as when the free agent contract comes out. Well, it is a little ridiculous. You've already got a $300 million contract with Adidas, and you've already been paid, you know, well over $60 million by the Bulls. PJ's future should be well assured, and if it's not, shame on you. You know, so I do understand that. I do understand a little bit of, come on, man. You know, that's ridiculous.
I get it. He did phrase it right.
Yeah, he's not the best communicator. You know, but I he's not. Does he play hard?
Who cares?
Exactly. To me, it's kind of like big picture. I don't really care what he says. As long as it's not offensive to me, you know, I'm glad he cares about his son's future. I'm glad he spends time with his son. I'd rather hear that than say he's worried about his future and making more money for his son. I hope he makes all the money he can possibly make. He deserves it. He works hard to be a great basketball player.
great.
Yeah.
If he shared with us what his motivation is, fine. Who cares what drives you? The fact is, and I don't think he was taking a shot at Butler personally. I feel like he was taking a shot at the league as a whole. And a lot of players have. Nobody made a stink out of it when John Wall came out there and said that, you know, well, it kind of puts into perspective things when you see guys like Reggie Jackson getting paid what I'm getting paid. Nobody said anything, and he's calling out a player on another team, and nobody's saying anything. Nobody's calling out Tristan Thompson, who's not playing for the Cleveland Cavaliers right now because he's sitting out because he was offered $16 million and not $19 million a season. Nobody's calling those guys out. That Derrick Rose, who has come back from these injuries, simply says at a press conference something about the same along the same lines of what John Wall said without calling anybody individually out. If that's what motivates them, who cares? We can't put ourselves in those position of players because they deserve the money they get paid, frankly. The league makes money. It should go back to the talent that's bringing people into the seats. It should. And if you think that players get played too much, throw on some shoes and go try to get in the NBA.
Somebody should try to say, hey, just watch what you're saying. But it's kind of like a two-way street, though, because he's being brutally honest on how he feels, and yet – When he is brutally honest, people jump on him. But if you have a guy just basically reciting, you know, the same statements and the same cliches, they're like, oh, this is boring, you know. So it's kind of like it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. I didn't lose any sleep over it. All I care about is Derek playing as hard as he can. Is he doing what he can to get healthy to play for the Bulls? I think he is. So who cares?
Who cares?
Big picture, I want him to win a title, and I think we're only going to do it if Derrick Rose is playing at a high level. So let's not, you know, jump on a kid every time he makes an incorrect statement. And I mean, Boers and Bernstein are just like they got an axe to grind with this guy, and it's ridiculous. And you know, they're jumping all over him about the comment. If you listen to the comment in a full context, he then later on went on to say, talking about free agency, I want it to be here in Chicago. You know, so it's not – I think it was kind of meant like, you know, they're kind of trying to paint it as a shot at the Bulls, an organization that paid him so much money and he's only played in, what, 40% of the available games? Hey, dude, he didn't want to get hurt. This wasn't his choice. It wasn't like, you know, hey, my knee exploded and, you know, this was my fault. No, his body betrayed him on a couple of these things. He's doing the best he can. That's, you know, I support him. You know, I want him to do well. I want him to get healthy, and let's rock and roll. Get the season underway. Hey, man, I got to head out.
Well, I just want to say really fast, they also jumped on him a few moments later when he made a comment about the reason that people are picking on him and Butler is because they're two black players. And, I mean, you know what?
Well, that's
what
a ridiculous statement.
It was a ridiculous statement, but again, let's stop looking at athletes like they're like messiahs. And it's like Derrick Rose says stupid things. He's been doing this throughout his whole career where he says dumb things. People liked him at the beginning because all he would say is, I love my mother, I love my mother, I love my mother, and my brothers rule. Since then, he's, you know, you've started to see some of the cracks in the armor in terms of things that he says. We've never seen cracks in the game. You've seen him come back from injuries. You've seen him working hard. And the fact of the matter is that everyone's like, oh, you can't give him the contract again. You can't give him the contract again. Let's finish this contract first. We still got 2 years left. If he plays these 2 years, that means that he was injured for two of the 5 years of the contract. He played at a high level last year. I don't care what anybody says. And if he plays at a very high level these next 2 years, that's a totally different ballgame. And the fact is that idiots are going to forget the fact that they were all like, meh, it'll be like me and the Cubs. Like, hey, whatever. Clear the books. It's as if what I said didn't even matter. It is, I can take the heat. I can take the heat, all of you people out there. I can take the heat for what I've said about the Cubs, and I hope to goddamn hell when Derrick Rose comes back to MVP status that you take the heat too.
Yeah, I mean, that statement to me was a little bit more irksome than any of them. I mean, it was clear there was some issue between him and Jimmy, and to what he basically did was accuse some writers or some people who followed the team of racism. And, you know, racism being a racist is, you know, one of the worst things you could say about somebody. So that's not something you throw, you should be throwing around.
Throw whatever you want about that issue.
Whatever you want about Joe Crowley, I don't care.
You can say that his children are actually werewolves. I don't care. He is veteran. He is a pariah on society.
Well, he's clearly along Joe Colley is in the same camp with Bernstein and Boers. They clearly don't like Derrick Rose, and they have an axe to grind with him and whatever. But I don't think the reasons are because they're racist. I think the reasons are is because they're just, you know, they have issues with Derrick and his camp, and it's stupid. It's petty, and you know, Joe Colley's going to do what he does, and you know, he's got a lot of fans in the business. I'm not one of them, but, you know, who cares? Big picture, he's going to shut up if this team comes out and ends up challenging and winning a title. So
my thing is that I'm just going to keep throwing things at Joe Cowley because, hey, if you want to talk about Derek that way, I'm going to talk about you that way because you want to know Joe Cowley, you suck. And you're a poor excuse for a writer. You're like the Perez Hilton of the NBA.
He kind of is.
You're not funny. That's the big difference. You're just like – you're just mean-spirited and cruel.
Amen.
Go to hell.
All right, brother. Hey, man,
right,
I got to hit the road. Sorry, I couldn't give you any more time, but good stuff. It's great. Hey, it's great to be talking about basketball.
Real fast. What about Paul George yesterday? Having 24 points in one quarter. Paul George was amazing. Is Paul George back, or do you need to see more?
No. That team, they lost Hibbert. Regardless of what you say about him, he was a big part of their interior defense, and that's a big strength of the team. I'm not losing any sleep about the Indiana Pacers coming out and biting us in the rear end. The only team I really care about is Cleveland. That team's the only legit team that the Bulls got to worry about. Milwaukee's going to be irksome, probably a little irritating. They're definitely better. You know, they got some nice pieces there, but I don't think they're anywhere near to be ready to challenge us. You know, and frankly, I got to stop saying frankly. I hate that word, but who cares? You know, who cares right immediately if the Bulls struggle initially? I think that might happen. You know, we might be just a few games over in January. All I want is this team roaring in April, May, and June. Seems like it never happens. Last year it kind of happened, you know, somewhat. I don't know if you felt that way. I thought they were playing pretty decent at the end of the year. I want to see them.
They were. I didn't think that they were. They
had a lot of injury players. I thought the last week or so, or 2 weeks, they started to kind of get it going. And the first three games in the Milwaukee series were, you know, something to behold. But and that's all I care about. I want the team peaking at the right time. You know, under Tibbs, all we did was peak in the preseason. We peaked in January. That was it. I want to peak at the end of the year. So let's keep the big picture in mind here. We're going to have a good time.
Big picture in it with Fred Pfeiffer. Freddie, my man, as always, good times. We got to do it sooner rather than later.
Sounds good, brother. All right,
Until next time, if it ain't Bulls.
It ain't basketball.